This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Talking about pushing the envelope.
So, how does it feel to once again walk into Hall H and be the rock star that you are?
Fleeting.
All you gotta do is walk down there right now and you'll get the same reaction.
Right, wouldn't be appropriate. The Hall H experience, I don't know what to say. I think the weird thing is... is I have a job, and I like it a bunch, and I like it best when I'm doing it. And then there's a bunch of other stuff that seems like when I was a teenager, what I wanted was the experience of walking into a Hall H and having a reaction like that. But I didn't actually want to have to do what it took to maybe earn anywhere near the kind of, you know, pseudo respect that gets you in that position. So I don't really know quite what to make of it. I know that it feels good, but I also know that one should exert caution over things that are that feel good just for a second and then are done.
How has Tony changed since Iron Man 1?
Well, that's, I think, the question he's asking himself. And I think that it brings up a lot of internal conflict. Because he was thought of as this kind of charming prick. And then he is almost killed. And then he exerts his own escape. Kind of heroic, but really on his own behalf. So I think that there's probably a bit of an imposter complex, and no sooner has he said, "I am Iron Man," than he's wondering really what that means. And if you have all this cushion like he does, and the public is on your side, and you have immense wealth and power, I think he's way too insulated to be okay. You know, and also, I think the footage has tipped the fact that he's struggling with some sort of contamination of his own system, and he has a very formidable guy saying, "I don't care what everyone thinks about you. I know that you come from a family of murderers and thieves, and I'm going to take you out of your misery." And maybe he almost half wants that to happen.
Seems like there's a lot going on there.
A lot going on. It's badass. This story is really sweet, and we're so proud of it because we worked so hard and spent so much time together and worked so many weekends and tore our eyebrows out to try to find the best way to express the most streamlined version of the complexities of what really would happen.
The Senate scene seems to be is that really a pivotal plot point in this film as far as the government wanting to get the tech?
It's a big activator. It's a big activator, but it is not the story at all.
But is it what drives the conflict between Tony and Justin, or is that already there before?
Well, I think if Justin Hammer is ready to step in and fill Tony's shoes and say, "Hey, dude, just let me do it for you." But if you look at Justin Hammer and you look at the way Sam Rockwell plays him, you'd be like, "Not you, buddy. You are a jerk. I don't trust you." And maybe he should have trusted him, or maybe he's more trustworthy than Tony thinks. But I think that Tony thinks he can handle everything if he just gets enough space, and he can figure everything out if he just puts his mind to it, and that's not the way it works. And I think that's the big lesson in this film, is that he has to utilize not only all of his own resources, but the resources of those close to him, and then resources from somewhere he never, ever, ever could have imagined. And it's not just as obvious as, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. steps in. It's actually a lot more primal than that. So it's a really kind of, like, multi-level, you know, what I would feel I deserved if I loved Iron Man 1, and I'm a huge sequel guy, like, if anyone says something shitty about Lethal Weapon 2 or Die Hard 2 or Matrix 2, I don't want to hear it. You don't understand. So even when they're not done perfectly, I'm crazy about them.
So this is going to be like Empire Strikes Back. It's going to surpass first.
Well, you know, there's a lot of debate about that. You know, we've heard a lot of Wrath of Khan, Empire Strikes Back, and the, you know.
The relationship between you and Rhodes seems to be almost kind of strained a little bit in the scene we saw with the set.
Yeah. Well, in that scene, it is. I don't think it's anyone's fault. As we remember in our previous incarnation, I give Rhodey a lot of shit, and I don't understand why, when I got out of the weapons business, he wouldn't just come with me. But I think there's also a big learning curve here of, you know, Rhodey is used to everything you do with a wingman, and when you go it alone, lives are lost. And I think Tony's thing is that Rhodey doesn't know what it's like to go it alone and be the lone samurai. And so that's something that is, there's very much a transference from both of them.
Could you talk about the fact that you have a huge franchise this Christmas and another huge franchise next summer, and yeah, what this is like for you?
What's it like? It's best that I return to that worker amongst workers thing, because it's the only place I'm effective. All that self-aggrandizing stuff, if I can take that and use it to help sell soap and promote the product I'm doing, because that's a big part of the job, I like it, you know. It's I have an embarrassment of riches, but it all comes down to the fact that when I'm working with people, I work really hard, and when I'm a worker amongst workers, the results are really, really, really satisfying. So,
and you just signed on for Todd Phillips, is that right?
Yes.
So could you talk a little bit about what this thing is?
Yeah. There's this guy whose wife is expecting, and he winds up getting kicked off a plane with another guy who's Zach Galifianakis. It's not his fault. And then they have to get from Atlanta to Los Angeles. And just imagine the likes of he and I with Phillips at the helm. It was like one of those things, it's like, I just did Sherlock and then this. I'm like, I gotta take some time off. This is crazy. And then I was like, oh, that? I read that and I'm like laughing my ass off.
It's like a new train, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles kind of.
Yeah, and there's a little Rain Man in there too. I must say. Definitely a little Rain Man in there.
Did you write into your contract for Iron Man 2 that you get an Iron Man suit of armor to take home?
You know, they keep telling me they're going to give me all the bells and whistles.
You got to have
them. I don't know.
That's
maybe
rad.
I'll make a
everybody
contractual.
That, your house would be like,
that would be good. That would be worshiping false idols, which is something I don't have any trouble with as long as that idol is made in my image.
It's giant.
Worker amongst workers.
Like
stop it.
It's that I don't imagine Tony Stark alcoholism storyline is deeper than this film.
It would be a shame to waste it in a movie that's already so is spinning so many plates. But as previously mentioned, if he was making some poor choices and then decided to throw himself a birthday party, expect that birthday party to be a bacchanalian just disaster.
We saw one of the scenes downstairs, you on a nightclub with Scarlett dancing. Could you talk about that scene?
I would imagine that was a piece of his birthday party. And he would not have his birthday party at a nightclub. He would probably blow his own roof off. I haven't seen an assembly yet, but there's a lot of really strong stuff. And let me put it this way: by the time War Machine and Iron Man go through their rigmarole and are back to back, there is some really cool Butch and Sundance stuff going on that I think should drive the best of them.
You actually just made an excellent point about the action in this movie. The action in the first movie, it's very much character-based with some great action. Is this movie a lot more action or than the first film, or how would you categorize it in comparison?
Every piece of action that happens in Iron Man 2 is a direct result of part of a character arc. including probably the biggest sequence in the first hour of the movie, just happens because, anyway, I don't want to give it away. Everything is a result of essentially dysfunction or mistakes made. And those mistakes, when you're Iron Man and when you're surrounded by the kind of people he is, the ramifications are ginormous.
Do we have more scenes with you and Sam Jackson as Nick Fury?
Pardon me?
Do we have more scenes with you and Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury?
Yeah, it's actually, to me, it's the real activating subplot of the movie. And and he is such a badass and such a talent. And we didn't have much time with him, but we really, really, really did something special, I think.
In the first film, Tony loses basically his only real family, his father figure.
Yeah.
But he grows up, he moves past it. In the second film, now that he's starting to develop his more self-destructive tendencies, how does that affect his relationship?
Well, I mean, as one would imagine, it does, but I think the interesting thing is that oftentimes in these films too, you know, it's either like the film is about girl power and you have monsters versus aliens or whatever, and then the rest of the time it's still kind of a misogyny light going on, and that is not the case, because when you have Paltrow returning to play Pepper for a second time, she's not just going to be going, "Tony, don't," or whatever. So actually, to answer your favorite scene, there's a scene where I come to try to apologize to her for what a schmuck I've been, and it doesn't go so well.
There's a huge...
But actually, it does. It solves the movie.
It does.
But not... Anyway...
You guys built like the biggest green screen ever.
Yes.
Out in the Sepulveda Dam.
Yeah.
Can you talk about filming in that sequence and, you know, just filming that sequence?
It's so strange. I don't even know how to describe the size of it. Just, I mean, like Close Encounters size. That's how I would describe it. Just this unimaginably large set. And then they built pylons and other stuff there, but it was still essentially the Sepulveda Dam. This was about 60 days into the 72-day shoot. Speaking of worker amongst workers, that was when I realized we were doing a really huge movie. The rest of the time, as much as there was bells and whistles and we had great sets and there was all kinds of action going on, I realized that while we were doing all this stuff, somebody... Well, Mike Riva and everyone else in the construction team had been building this thing all along for 3 days of shooting. Nuts.
Were you surprised how big your cameo in Hulk was? It became the main selling point of the film, and every critic mentioned it. It wasn't fun to do.
Yeah, it was fine. I think you call that piggybacking, and I leave that to the experts at Marvel. Next time, I'd like them to maybe buy me a Cabin in Big Bear, but you know, that's really up to them. That Cabin in Big Bear.
Do
you like Big Bear?
Mama, that's for Mama.
Mama?
Yes, because then I can use it.
From a creative standpoint, are you having an input as far as the Avengers and how that's being put together?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in a really enviable position that I'm part of the creative team from inception. This one really took a lot out of us because we knew that we had to meet our own expectations and therefore the expectations of the people who made this film successful. So as far as Avengers goes, you know, I mean, that's the mountain, you know, that's the mountain that would have to be carefully climbed. I guess. I love that I'm talking about these things like it's a NASA project. Movie. Thank you, one and all.
Thank you. My best to your wife.
Thank you.